No, it's Just Plain Radio.
Yeah.
The show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
I can fly. Take me to the pilot, lead me to the tamer.
Take me to the pilot. Brought to you by JustPlaneRadio.com.
It's your lucky day.
Your aviation resource on the information super skyway.
You got a plane.
Call Just Plane Radio toll-free now at 888-884-2FLY.
And the sky's the limit.
That's 888-884-2359.
Sir, I'd like you to take the helm, please.
I'll be glad to. Greg, your co-pilot, that's me, along with Captain Ed. We are your crew today for Just Plane Radio, the show devoted to the aviation lifestyle and learning to fly. A lot of stuff happening this week in aviation news. We're going to navigate that here promptly and give you a little update on my flight training. Are you ready, Ed? I told you last week I was going to go see the eye doctor. I got an update for you.
And is that why you're wearing a patch over one eye?
Well, yeah. And that, and I want to be a pirate. Arr, matey.
Well, that's the other show.
Yeah. Well, you know, I might flying, you know, ships in the air. I don't know. We'll give everyone an update on that momentarily. But first, we got to check in with our aviation expert on the road, and that would be Evington, who happens to be, I don't know, where you're in Puerto Rico right now, San Juan? Is that it?
Yeah, I'm chilling in San Juan.
Chilling in San Juan in between working her gig in the Caribbean. So what have you been up to, Evington? Give us the lowdown.
Oh my gosh. Well, let's see. So far, I've flown 300 hours of turbine, which is like way easier than piston airplane flying.
Easier. Why? What do you mean?
Well, because, you know, when you fly a piston aircraft, you have to lean out the mixture, you have to watch your temperatures. Mm-hmm. You've got to do a lot of monitoring and manipulating the controls, like your throttle quadrant, throughout the duration of the flight. And when you're on the descent and when you're on the climb, you got to change things and set different things for climb and descent and everything. Mm. In a turbine, you literally just set it once, basically, and you go. Like your condition levers, you have these things called condition levers.
Yeah.
And basically, they go forward. And then when you cruise, you bring them back. And then when you land, you bring them back forward. Hmm. And that's it. And your power stays the same. I mean, everything basically pretty much stays the same. Yes, you have to watch a temperature to make sure you don't exceed because turbines are very hot. But more or less, it is so much easier. You can't shock cool a turbine engine. You can't lean it out too much and cut off the fuel while you're in the process of, like, saving fuel and cruise. None of that stuff.
All right. This has nothing to do with, like, FedEx and stuff.
Well,
No. This is, like, all manual.
Yeah, it's still all manual.
But, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
But kind of the neat thing that Abington, I've got a customer, a friend of ours, Steve, that has a brand new Baron, and we've been teaching him how to fly it. And he didn't believe me when I said, this is the toughest thing you're going to do, piston twin, single pilot IFR. That, you know, he wants to eventually move up to a TBM. I said the TBM will be easier. That's why you're flying this now, is so that the insurance company believes you can handle the TBM. But trust me, the TBM will be easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Greg, to kind of relate it to you, when you and Keith flew the diesel powered 172, you only had the single lever.
Yeah, I liked it.
And, you know, push button start, and you know, so
it was Greg proof.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, turbine is probably where you need to go. That Quest Kodiak with the PT6 on it.
Oh, so that's a turbine too.
Yeah.
So that would be an easier plane for me to fly, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
But the insurance company still thinks it's a bigger and more difficult plane to fly.
It's more expensive.
So they're going to charge you more.
Yeah.
Whatever reason they can come up with to charge you more and make it more difficult, they're going to do it, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Right. Well, at least I know that mentally I should be able to handle it, is what you're saying, right? That is what you're saying.
I'm not saying that at all.
No, we can't guarantee that.
Oh, Greg, come on, really? Both of you? I thought surely Abington would bail me out of that.
Flight instructors have to stick together.
Yeah, I guess so. All right. Well, you're enjoying some downtime down there in Puerto Rico in between the gig. Is that the deal? And just enjoying some sunshine or what?
Yeah, most of my downtime has been spent touring around the Caribbean because I get the flight benefits of working for an airline.
Right.
So I've been to Virgin Gorda. I've been to Anguilla. I've been to St. Croix. I've been to Tortola. I've been to Dominica. There's 32 islands that I need to visit. So even though that sounds like I've been to a lot of places, I've like barely hit the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. So this is the first, I was supposed to go to St. Thomas, cause I'm off today through Friday, and I was going to go down to St. Thomas and visit some friends, but I just got slammed with work. The Abbey Dig Company is offering a scholarship. We offer a scholarship every year, and the deadline to get in the application was January 31st. So we're reviewing all the applications, and basically what we do is the winner will win a full registration, airfare, hotel, the whole works to the Women in Aviation Conference held in March. And the whole point, like the application process, is to be as creative as possible and submit something to the Abingdon Company that is for us, that we can use either in marketing or
cash.
Social media or whatever. Not cash.
That doesn't work, I guess, in this case.
We want some creativity. So one of our big things that we did was we had a sticker come out 1 year. An applicant made a sticker for us, and we still use it today.
Yeah, the one that's what it says, time to fly.
That ladies, one? It's time to fly.
Ladies,
yeah, yeah.
It's time to fly, yeah.
Yeah, that was made by a scholarship winner.
Well, how about that?
I think like 08, 09. So it's been great because we could do that. So we're going through all the different applications right now. And I mean, we've had an applicant translate our entire website into Spanish, all sorts of cool stuff. So I'm just swamped with work right now. So I'm actually taking these 4 days and working.
Okay.
Aww. Well,
I know.
Has a real job for once. See, pilots don't have it all, I guess. At least the one they're not flying.
That's the beauty of your business, though. You can do it there on the beach, and you know,
yeah,
it's the lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
It's quite a gig. All you have to do is avoid getting like the Zika virus and all that kind of crap, right? I mean, is that an issue, by the way? Because you're flying all through these areas that we're reading about
Puerto
in the
Ricans
news.
Puerto Ricans are dropping like flies. Like, I'll be walking down the street, and one of them will just drop.
Yeah?
Zika.
Wow. That's not good. So you just...
No, I'm kidding. It's not that bad.
You had him, hook, line, and sinker.
I was like, wow. It's like The Walking Dead in real life or something. It's coming back. You know, anyway. But yeah, I don't know. But are they telling you guys to take any special precautions for stuff like that? Do you have to do that when you're flying in an airline in the Caribbean? Well, you know, do they like go? I know they go through the aisles and like do that little bug spray stuff thing, right? They have to do that in each place?
Not in each place, no. We don't have to do that. I mean, all the Caribbean islands, it's not like... If you find a bug on one island, you're pretty much going to find it on all the islands.
Well, true.
So you're not really protecting yourself from a particular island. But, I mean, wear mosquito repellent, which you want to anyway, just because they're everywhere.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's not much way to avoid it. I ask this because I'm getting ready to fly down to Cuba. And I'm flying on some kind of charter airline, and I'm reading all this stuff that's a little bit outside the realm of a commercial carrier. Because,
sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like they, I'll get into that a little bit later on. But, you know, you'll hear all about it here in a couple weeks.
Just wear
after
a hazmat suit. You'll be fine.
You think that's what it is?
Yeah.
I was going to have a big rubber suit as well. I was just going to wear like a wetsuit.
Think Marty McFly in Back to the Future.
Really? What do you mean? What are you trying to say?
That he wore the hazmat suit.
No, I want to go with like a morph suit. Show off my girly physique.
You mean like Mork and Mindy?
No, a morph, not Mork.
Oh.
but yeah.
Nano.
Yeah. But I guess you could do that too. I mean, that would work. Anyway, I digress. What about the flying? What have you been doing lately as far as, have you been into some new, airports since we last spoke as far as some unique landing situations or what?
Yeah, totally. I went to Nevis for the first time,
yes.
St. Kitts and Nevis,
mm-hmm.
and that's a pretty crazy airport. You should definitely look it up on YouTube. With the airline I fly, it's a captain only landing. They don't even allow first officers to land.
So you were only you had to watch.
I got to sit back and enjoy the ride and watch him land the airplane. It was super cool, though. I mean, you have to come in at this crazy angle because there's a big mini hill right on short final that's like right off the beach. The airport on one side of the airport of the strip is the ocean. The other side is a mountain. So
yeah, I think I've seen a video of an Aztec going off into the water there.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good. No, not at all. It's a beautiful island, though. What is good? Are you being attacked by a dog? What's going on over there?
No, I'm getting over it. Getting over it.
Zika. Told you. she'll manage.
Yeah.
You know, but Nevis is like the island to the stars. The island's beautiful, but a lot of celebrities go there. Last time I was there, the Who, Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey were hanging out.
Oh, cool.
They kept fair distance away from my crew,
I can imagine.
All right, more coming up. Stay close.
Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle. Imagine traveling twice as fast as you can drive. Imagine taking friends and family snorkeling, surfing, skiing, shopping, and more to exotic destinations. Imagine attending business meetings in cities far away and still making it home at night. Or just imagine exploring the wild blue yonder.
Quit dreaming about it and get to it. There has never been a better time to become a private pilot, and flight training professionals in Orlando will show you how. Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is your full-service flight school. A state-of-the-art flight simulator, a fleet of the latest Cessna aircraft, and a staff of full-time seasoned flight instructors are just a few of the many reasons Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is the place to start your aviation adventure. Call 407-896-0077. That's 407-896-0077. Or go to ftpros.com. That's ftpros.com.
Whether you're a flight student, an experienced pilot, or simply an aviation enthusiast, there is a place for you as a member of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. Join AOPA to get the latest general aviation news, safety resources, and technical support you need to sharpen your skills and become a central part of the nation's vibrant general aviation community. Learn more about becoming a member at AOPA.org. That's AOPA.org.
As pilots, it's all about the journey. But sometimes situations arise that can turn an adventure into a nightmare. Do what divers do. Join DAN, Divers Alert Network. The many benefits of a DAN membership go way beyond water activities. As a DAN member, you automatically receive DAN Travel Assist and up to $100,000 of evacuation assistance coverage. This applies to both diving and non-diving medical emergencies. Dive into DAN.org for details. DAN, your Dive Safety Association.
With Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
You're no saint. You got a free cab, you got a free room, someone who'll listen to your boring stories.
I mean, didn't you notice on the plane when you started talking, eventually I started reading the vomit bag?
I'm getting drunk on a plane.
Buying drinks for everybody but the pilot, it's a party. Got the 737 rocking like a G. This is some sexy leading, pouring coke and whiskey. Told her about my condition, got a little mile high flight attention. It's Mardi Gras up in the clouds. I'm up so high they never come down. I'll try anything to drown out the pain. They all know why I'm getting drunk on a plane.
This is Just Plain Radio. Greg, your co-pilot. That's me along with Captain Ed from Flight Training Professionals. And our special guest right now, Abington from the Abington Watch Company. Now, I don't know if you spent Mardi Gras, you know, up in a plane like that guy did. But what else you been doing out there in the Caribbean lately there, Abington, is, other than flying into places like Nevis? And
Yeah, I spent Super Bowl Sunday in Nevis, so that was fun.
Nice.
Big party there. What else?
Did you see any celebrities when you're on Nevis? Were you you went to like one of the sports bars or something, or just the airport bar and watched the game, or what?
No, at the hotel I was staying at, which is Owali, I think is how you pronounce it.
Sure, I've been to Owali, of course.
Okay.
It's beautiful.
Chef?
Do I know Chef?
Do you know Chef? Yeah. Mm. Apparently everybody knows Chef.
Chef. I bet I do, but I don't really remember him by his name as much as maybe by his look.
Okay, so the restaurant there and the bar, they had it projected up on the wall, the game.
Cool.
So everybody was there.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about Chef, like after the game, I was just sitting there talking with my captain, and he like comes over and introduces himself, and then he sits down, and then he gave us a drink of like the local hooch and like just chatted with us for a while. And apparently that's like what he does with all of the guests that come through.
Very nice. Now, the local hooch would be called Hammond, by the way, which is a kind of like a rum infused type of concoction, infused with a certain type of herb kind of thing. You know, it was outlawed back in the day of Prohibition, right? And General Hammond evidently was the person in charge of keeping it outlawed. And he didn't do a very good job because they ended up naming the drink after him. So I know that much about some of the local concoctions there in you know, on the island in Nevis. But yeah, beautiful place. Owali is a beautiful resort. Matter of fact, that place where you were hanging out watching the Super Bowl, I wasn't here at the time. And I said, you know, it's like an island to the stars. I went out there. I've been there like three times, right? And about a month before the first time I visited the island in Nevis and hung out at Owali, Matthew McConaughey had showed up at that bar one night on a Friday night by himself. Nobody recognized him. And typical, you know, island night, everyone sat around the bar where you were watching the Super Bowl and just kicking back and having a good time. And next thing you know, they start dancing, and he was sitting off by himself, they said. And after about an hour, he got up and started dancing with them. And all of a sudden, they turn around and realize, holy crap, that's Matthew McConaughey. And they ended up partying all night. So that's the kind of atmosphere they have on the island of Nevis. And you saw how Owali is. It's kind of like a little, you know, a place time forgot. It has all the nice cools, but very quaint, very cool, awesome sunsets right there at the beach.
Yeah. And the water is shallow for days. I mean, you could walk out almost like a mile. Like you could, there's no waves. Just go swim. It's like a giant pool.
Absolutely.
The water right there.
Great diving. I went off right off the coast of Owali and caught my dinner of lobster last time I was there, and had it cooked up down the beach at the Four Seasons. Yes, I'm kind of a big deal every now and then. I know people.
Only in your mind.
Yeah,
Greg, only in your mind.
Maybe. But yeah, beautiful. I love Nevis. And yeah, we visited the airport there, and I was wondering about how easy it would be to just fly your own private plane into this, because it really is a beautiful, you know, it's underdeveloped, or I mean, it's very rustic and a natural looking type of island. Some really nice high end resorts like the Four Seasons and things like that, but it's very scattered and very much an out island type experience compared to St. Kitts, which is a pretty much, you know, the big brother island of of that change. Is that a trick to fly into St. Kitts, or is that like any other airport in the Caribbean?
I mean, St. Kitts is like right in the middle of the island. Yeah. Not in the middle where the mountain is, but there's land on both sides. Like, you're not going to fall off into the ocean if you don't make
right.
the runway type
yeah,
of thing,
they take the fun out of it a little bit, is what you're saying. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So, St. Kitts, Nevis, where else you been lately that you can shed some light on in that regard?
St. Thomas, St. Croix, Guadeloupe. I love staying in Guadeloupe. That's a fun airport, fun place. I get to practice my French. So
now, Guadeloupe, is that the island next to Dominica? Just up from Dominica, or am I mixed up again?
No, you're right. It's down there.
Okay. Yeah?
I don't think it's right next to it, but
that's what I thought. I thought it was the island
a
next to Dominica. Right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That is.
You're right.
You're right. So, I've heard about that island. So, is that one tricky to fly into, or not so much?
No, that one's a really long runway, and you've got runway for days there. So, that one's easy. I mean, 747s and things fly in and out.
Okay. So Guadalupe is kind of like, or Guadalupe's kind of like the St. Kitts of Nevis, comparing it to maybe the airport there in Dominica. Which you have a similar type of thing. You got mountains you got to avoid, and there's not a lot of room for, I don't know, making mistakes, I guess. Right?
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. So easier to fly into Guadeloupe, and you get you go there and you work on your French. Is that what you said?
Well, yeah. It's a French-speaking island, so yeah. I get to practice my French. Everybody there speaks French.
Okay. All right, have you gotten good at it or no?
Oh, oui, oui. Bien sûr.
Okay. And I don't know. I think she asked, she wanted to know how much longer we were going to go because she had to go to the bathroom. That's all I got out of that. So I could be off.
I'll give you.
Yeah, you're probably
off. Do you want to have a free flight instructor lesson of combined with some French history from me? I'll be your flight instructor for like 1 minute.
Okay, go.
Do you know where the word Mayday comes from?
Mayday.
When you say Mayday, Mayday, Mayday when your airplane's going down or you have an emergency?
Where it comes from. I'm stumped. Do I get a multiple guess kind of option here or what?
No, you didn't know or you don't.
Oh, okay, I don't. So
that would be a no, he doesn't.
Teach me.
So it's the French word for help me is M apostrophe A-I-D-E, and that's pronounced aide. So it's M apostrophe aide, m'aide. So to say help me in French, it's m'aide, m'aide. That is where Mayday comes from.
That's how we're supposed to say it. Otherwise, we sound like some gringo-looking goofball with a
Mayday,
cowboy hat.
Je parle français.
Yeah, okay.
Mayday, Mayday, get me out of here.
I think she just made that up.
No.
I believe it's true. I believe her 100%.
No, I didn't make that up. That's true.
It's impressive regardless. More coming up. Stay close.
Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
I've been up around the stratosphere at 31,000 feet. I'm gonna fly on out of here on wings that you can't see. If you're gonna fly high without fear, you're gonna have to learn to love the atmosphere. And you gotta learn to use those wings you can't see.
Mayday, mayday. This is Greg, your co-pilot, along with Captain Ed. We are your crew for Just Plane Radio, being helped out right now by our flight instructor and Caribbean flying friend, Abington from the Abington Watch Company.
And our French teacher.
Our French teacher, yes, evidently. Mayday is... has its origins in French. And what you were telling me during the commercial break, Orville and what's his name, those guys? The Wright brothers?
The Wright brothers.
Are French?
No, I was just kidding.
No.
They're not French.
Right, that makes no sense.
Gullible, but no.
What were you saying?
But the reason I said, you know, the French believe they invented flying.
Yeah.
Is because, and the English believe they invented flying, and, you know, that they all have their own ways of doing things. And so in the compromise,
yeah,
you know, we agreed to use some of their terms, and that's part of the Mayday thing. But there is some argument on who flew first, whether it was somebody in France or the Wright brothers.
Wait, we're in America, so I'm saying it was the Wright brothers.
Yeah, no, I
we're
agree.
Americans.
I think that was disproved, but there was for years arguments about that.
Wait,
just
wait,
because
wait.
The French wanted to be first.
Wait, you're saying it was disproved that the Wright brothers were first, or vice versa?
It was proved that they were first. The other guys weren't.
Ah, okay.
So
you're just trying to confuse me, is what you're saying?
No, you do that on your own.
Well, maybe.
But
Mayday.
May I add something to the historical Wikipedia
that we're broadcasting?
Ramonde de la Roche, which I believe she was a baroness in France,
mm-hmm.
She is the first woman to be given the honor of taking flight in an airplane. Oh. And I believe that was in France.
Cool.
So,
did not know that.
See, you are just full of fun little news nuggets today there, Abington.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem.
You're bringing the level of sophistication up a notch. That's not really saying much for this group.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a low bar, Greg.
We do appreciate it regardless. And you got to get back to your flying activities down there in the Caribbean. And thank you for checking in once again here on Just Plane Radio.
Anytime.
Just Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Takeoff with Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
$6 in my right nut says we're not landing in Chicago.
This is Just Plane Radio. Greg, your co-pilot. That's me along with Captain Ed for Flight Training Professionals. All right, so last couple weeks, I've been saying that I was going to go to the optometrist. I was going to go to a LASIK organization and have them check out my eyes for me before I got back into my flight training and see if I could do anything about this, seeing up close nonsense. When I was doing my flight training, actively about a year and a half ago, I was having some issues with my cheaters. I had to use them to see, read all the numbers. And it's just annoying. I hate wearing glasses. I can't stand it. I had RK done like 25 years ago, and it's been great. I can still see perfectly fine far away. I don't start losing it till right about, my arm's length now. What? What are you doing?
You lost it a long time ago, but that's something else.
Yeah. We're talking vision.
Not okay. Sanity.
Well, yeah, that's luckily that's on a much more subjective grading scale. So anyway, I went and had this consultation with the LASIK folks here in Orlando, and we talked about it. I can't get it done. I can have it have them do this stuff. Now I did some checking with AOPA, and on what would it take if I do have any eye surgery done. You got to wait 6 months. For your eyes to stabilize, which is understandable.
Yeah, and I knew that there was a period. I just couldn't remember how long of a period. I'm kind of surprised it's that long.
Well, it I think it varies depending on the procedure you have done, too. But the one that I would have had done if I were to elect to have it would be a six-month waiting period after to let my eyes stabilize for monovision. Which would basically be they would fix one eye so I could see up close. The other vision, other eye, they'd leave alone. And so they call that monovision. Then your brain compensates so you can see clearly regardless, which is kind of strange.
Yeah, I think that would be a problem with depth perception and landing.
Yeah, well, that's why you have to wait 6 months because your eyes need time to adjust. And your brain needs time to, get that depth perception in check, I guess.
Yeah.
Work it through. In my case, I'm sure my brain would operate way faster than most.
Yeah.
Muggy. Maybe not. But regardless.
That was nice. I didn't take the shot I could take.
I was wide open. I left it. I just laid it right up there for you.
You're just lucky Keith wasn't here because he wouldn't have hesitated.
Yeah.
He would have cut you off at the knees.
Yeah. Well, So what we discussed, I was like, well, if I have this done, maybe I don't really want to do this right off the bat. This monovision, if it's going to throw off my depth perception, I kind of would like to try it first. I mean, what if I just take a contact, fix that one eye to how we would with the surgery, and then I can see what it does?
Yeah, actually, they do that.
Yeah, well, they gave me a couple of contacts, and I put one in. I'm like, I hate this. Actually, they gave me the wrong speed, or I don't know, what is it?
Power.
Yeah, because, sure, I could see really close, but, as you see here in the studio, 3 or 4 feet away, I'm looking at a monitor. I have to see that, and I could see up here close now, but now I couldn't see what was on the monitor. Which would have been our dash of the airplane.
Yeah.
So I'd have to change power.
There's another thing out there you might want to look into.
Really?
Multifocal contacts.
Progressive lens.
Well, it's different than that.
So
the way I understand multifocal is when you separate the contact out, there are all these little sectors that have different powers in it.
Yeah.
And you're using one sector to read here, and then your one sector to look out there, and it's got both corrections. And so it's like you have a progressive lens, but your brain, from what I understand, will figure out which part of the contact to look through, when it needs to read, when it needs to look out.
That sounds like, you know, stuff you would see on the Terminator.
Well, it works really well.
Really?
Yeah.
So I didn't know they make those for contacts.
Yeah.
So they do. Because that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, crap. I'm just going to have to stick with the glasses and do progressive lenses. But maybe I need to go back and look at that.
Yeah.
But here's the kicker.
There is a waiting period on adjustment to them, but it's like a couple weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, the thing is, even if I was to do the monovision and adjust the power where, okay, I don't need it to be that close in focus, let's move it back to, you know, 2-3 feet. So I can see the dash fine. That's what I was like. Well, I got to be able to see the dash of the airplane. That's going to be a problem.
Yeah, you've got really three places you're going to be looking at. You're going to be looking at your charts or your iPad.
Right. Up on close, the yoke.
You're
intermediate.
Gonna, you're going to have the dash and you're going to have outside.
Yeah.
So now I actually do have those multifocals.
Okay. Or progressive lenses is what they would call it, right?
No, they call them multifocal contacts.
Oh, you have the contacts.
I have them.
Oh, okay.
Because I was getting the same way. I was using my cheaters all the time because I had the one contact set, you know, for distant vision, and then, you know, so my nearsightedness came in, and so I started using the cheaters to read, and I couldn't read without them.
Right.
So I was carrying them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the multifocal, so I can sit here and I can read at this distance. You know, the phone's about, you know, same distance to the yoke. I can read everything on the phone.
Yeah.
I can see fine in the room. It's only when, like, I get a text on my Apple Watch, it's a little too close and a little too small. So that's about the only place I really use them anymore, unless I'm doing a lot of reading, then I might throw some cheaters on then. But it in the cockpit, I don't need anything extra.
Yeah.
You know, I could see everything I need to see.
Oh, and that's the key. That's what I'm trying to avoid. I don't like wearing the cheaters in the cockpit. That was a pain in the butt before.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to see if I can avoid that. Now, here's the kicker, though. If I were to go back to the monovision option that I talk with the LASIK folks about, I could have the surgery done. Mm-hmm. I could wait the 6 months to let my eyes adjust, get the depth perception squared away, and I could be good to go. However, if I want to do an intermediate plan of a contact, that's not allowed. You can't use the contacts. And I'm like, I actually called up AOPA about this. I said, yeah, because I looked on their website, looked under the medical thing on optical and all that kind of stuff. And I saw that. I was like, wait a minute. You got to spend like the $5,000-$6,000 to get your eye fixed. And that way you can go and do it after 6 months. But if you want to do an intermediate plan with a contact, no can do. They won't let you do that. And I guess I asked the lady, I said, well, what's the purpose? What are they saying? That, you know, the contact might fall out or something? No, she said, well, because of the depth perception issue, the 6 months there, the reason the surgery has to wait 6 months is that your brain has to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have the time. If you put contacts in all the time, back and forth, your brain isn't necessarily going to adjust accordingly with the depth perception. But that still kind of blows.
Yeah.
So I don't like that solution.
Yeah.
Your solution sounds pretty interesting. You know other folks using that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and is it, so it's a little like a lens computra that you put in your eyeball, like the Terminator? No?
No.
It's not like that at all.
No.
But how does your brain know to move the lens around?
The lens doesn't move.
The lens doesn't move. Your brain knows which part of the lens to look through for a particular type of distance.
Yeah.
And you that might sounds have to, freaky.
You know, you might just blink your eyes and all of a sudden it's refocused on the right spot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll have to check those out. And as far as you know, there's no issue with that other than, well, you have to wear them when you get your certificate and then your guy.
Yeah, it's a very short wait time that you have to prove that you can adjust.
Right. But I mean, when you get your medical and you have to do your little eye test with the doc, if you're wearing a contact, you got to tell him, and he's like, okay, he's fine, but he's going to have to wear his contact
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
And that's one of those things that as you go through your medical exam, they have to test you initially in your initial test. Or if you go to a doctor for the first time, they'll test you your uncorrected and your corrected vision. And then after that, they just check the corrected.
Got it. Okay. Well, I made some progress. You know, I'm working through it.
Yeah.
I got a couple other little things. I'm going to check into doing one of these Lifeline screenings. I'm going to get that out of the done. I figured, why not get my eyes, a physical, everything done totally out there, and then go get my aviation certificate, and I'll be good to go. That sound like a good plan?
What is this Lifeline?
Like they scan you for, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. It's like a super-duper X-ray or something. I don't know. We'll find more out.
It sounds like a hypochondriac scam.
I'm just checking off all the boxes. You want me to be as normal as I can be physically, don't you?
Oh, well,
you know about the other part.
Yeah, thank you for coming physically there.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about going to Cuba, so I'm trying to, you know, flush out all these potential issues. We'll talk about that next.
Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Be an explorer in the other two-thirds of your world. Be the buddy who takes the kids in the aquarium instead of just to it. Be adventurous. Be amazed. Be a diver.
For nearly 75 years, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association has been a beacon for those who cherish the freedom to fly. AOPA protects your rights as a pilot by fighting airspace restrictions, fuel taxes, user fees, airport closings, and other issues that threaten your ability to take to the sky. AOPA is on the front lines every day to ensure that general aviation and the interests of its members are promoted and safeguarded. Learn more about how you can become a member at AOPA.org.
Have you ever seen a diver down flag floating on top of the water? Well, I'm Greg the Dive Master, and I'll tell you what this means, whether you're diving or not, next.
This scuba tip is brought to you by DAN, Divers Alert Network. DAN helps divers in need of medical emergency assistance with the DAN hotline and is the most recognized and trusted organization worldwide in the fields of dive safety and emergency services, health, research, and education. Join DAN today by going to DAN.org. DAN, your dive safety association.
In the U.S., a red flag with a diagonal white stripe through it means diver down. It's a badge of honor when seen on a diver's shirt, hat, bumper sticker, and the like. However, when you see a dive flag on the water, boaters should stay at least 300 feet away, while divers stay within 150 feet of their flag. It's the law in some areas and just good sense in order to prevent injury by prop and vessel strikes. Dive into DAN.org for more info and to Scuba Radio to get the urge to submerge. Scuba Radio.
For takeoff with Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
A buzzard took a monkey for a ride in the air. The monkey thought that everything was on a square. The buzzard tried to throw the monkey off his back, but the monkey grabbed his neck and said, "Now listen, Jack. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top."
So, Captain Ed, you know, last week you were talking about drone registrations.
Yeah.
It was like 325,000 people.
Yeah.
And you saw the press release that they've already passed.
Yeah, there are now more registered drone owners than there are registered aircraft.
Yeah. What do you think is going to happen? Are they going to take over?
I think, you know, that whole Terminator thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to become autonomous and take over the world.
That would make sense. It was just, they were just predicting the future. James Cameron.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It was a documentary of the future.
Arnold. Yeah, maybe.
But no, seriously, that does bother me that, you know, it's growing out of control. And, you know, yeah, will it cause a problem someday, somehow? Probably. And I just, it's... there was also something I saw where a homeowners association is now deciding they can regulate the airspace above their subdivision.
They did. Where did you see that? Was that my HOA? Because I hate them.
No, they yeah, I've heard the stories. Don't go there. Not for prime time. Mm-hmm. But you know, they're you know, outlawing drones because of safety and security and privacy and it's like, well, unfortunately, they don't have
control of the airspace.
The legal control of that.
Yeah.
So it should be interesting to see how the FAA chimes in on that.
Mm-hmm. Quit nude bathing. Quit nude sunbathing already. My God, you're grossing us out enough already as it is. Anyway, yeah. All right, so...
And it must be your subdivision.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just me mooning people. I just do that for fun and frolic. All right, so, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, the number of drones are already like 20,000 more registered than pilots. And that's a conservative estimate. That's just what they think.
That's registered. That's not how many are out there.
Right. Yeah, because a drone pilot or someone who owns a drone just has to register once. He could have like 5-10 drones.
Yeah.
So it's just no telling where that's going to go. But it's definitely the numbers are a bit scary for sure. All right. Well, here on a lighter note and more fun for that matter, from my perspective, I'm heading to Cuba.
It was nice knowing you.
What do you mean? What, are you worried about this? Why? I'm not worried.
Going to communist country.
It's going to be a very cool experience, I have no doubt.
No, I'm totally cool.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to it. Now, they've loosened up the restrictions way beyond what I even thought they had been. I mean, there's like 10 categories now,
mm-hmm.
and the categories are so broad to fly into Cuba, it's ridiculous. Now, it's easy for me to say this now since I haven't went yet, so I'll obviously have more firsthand experience when I get back.
Mm-hmm.
But just from what I've read,
mm-hmm.
you don't even have to file any paperwork or anything. It's kind of like on, you know, the honor system.
Mm.
You know, you go down there, it's like, are you under journalism? Are you under humanitarian? Are you under environmental studies? Are you a friend of someone who has family on the island? It can be that broad.
Wow.
Or something like that. You know, and don't quote me on that. Look it up online. You can find it for yourself. But it's very broad. And the key is there's no paperwork. You don't have to file a special form, which I figured you'd have to do that at least.
Yeah.
You don't even have to do that. And the kicker was, and obviously this is going to be real interesting, but you can bring like $400 worth of stuff back now.
Cohibas.
That's a lot of rum and a lot of cigars.
Cohibas.
Now, I don't know what I'm guessing there must be some other kind of restriction to this, because I can't believe you can bring that much back. That's a hell of a lot of rum, let alone cigars.
Especially what they cost down there compared to what if you were able to go and buy that same cigar in England,
mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah, you know, these Cohibas and Monte Cristos or whatever, they cost like 50, 70, 80, 100 bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, I don't know, you like pay them, they just give them away there in Cuba is what I've been told. I'll give them like $1 and I'll sell it to you for $100. We'll be good to go.
Not.
I'm going to pay for my entire trip.
Not.
No, I wouldn't.
You can do that to your other friends, but not me.
True. And I will. you know, the only thing I found out at the Havana Club, which is, you know, like the big rum they have down there in Cuba.
Yeah.
I've heard it's still quite expensive, even in Cuba, compared to like the Bahamas. Like, you go over to the Bahamas, I mean, literally the rum is cheaper than the water. I kid you not.
They drink more of it there than the water.
Well, literally a bottle of water will cost you more than a bottle of rum in the Bahamas. And I was told the other day when I was checking up on this $400 thing, I'm like, oh my God, I could bring a whole case or two back of Havana Club. Oh, no, that stuff's still expensive. It was like $25-$30 a bottle. I'm like, what? I can go down to the local liquor. Well, I can't get that.
Yeah.
But if you were in the Bahamas and you were buying Havana Club, you'd still pay that kind of money.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I'll have to find out what the lowdown is. You can imagine, or you're slowly but surely finding out what my priorities are.
Booze and stogies.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's pretty much common. What else is there to go down to Cuba for?
True.
Yeah. My case, it'll be some diving. We're going to do some research on lionfish and things like that with the Guy Harvey folks.
Cool.
Yeah. So I actually have a real reason. I'm not just going down there to smoke cigars and drink some rum. That's just one of the activities.
That's a side benefit.
That I'll have to partake in just to soak in the entire, you know, have the cultural exchange.
You're not really good about posting pictures, but you should get some pictures of some of the cars you see down there, too.
Oh, yeah. We actually have a car outside our hotel, a 57 Chevy that we're supposed to have exclusive use of.
How
about
that?
Cool. I'll be riding in style, just like one of them dudes from ZZ Top. And you'll hear all about it here in a week or two, so make sure you tune in for it accordingly. Till then, remember, there's no better high
than learning to fly.
Just Plain Radio is brought to you by JustPlainRadio.com.
I say we take off and nuke the entire site from orbit.
Your aviation resource on the information super skyway.
It's the only way to be sure.
Just Plain Radio is a production of Overboard Entertainment Incorporated.
But just plain wrong.
Remember, you can listen live or to archives of past shows worldwide over the internet at JustPlainRadio.com.
I'm going to leave my people up to the radio tower.
So tell a friend and take off every week with Just Plain Radio.
And I'm going to make a call.
The show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Listen up, everybody. I have some news.
The opinions you just heard on Just Plain Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests.
We are screwed.
They are not necessarily those of any station or network, its management, or advertisers.
A little too far. Cross the line.
There are many factors to consider before learning to fly.
What is your problem?
So make sure you do your own research and get the proper instruction before your exploration into aviation.
Thank you very much, sir.
Have any questions or comments? Feel free to do so via the web at JustPlainRadio.com.